PPI.org.
Evening. Thank you for joining Disability and Progress. You're tuned to KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and KFAI.org. Tonight, my name is Sam. I'm the host of the show. Miguel is engineering this episode. Thank you, Miguel. Charlene Dahl is my research team. Thank you, Charlene. And hello, by the way.
Good evening.
And tonight we are discussing Metromobility. We're talking about some new changes and we're going to visit some old topics of Metromobility. We're speaking with Andy Strasek. Andy is the manager of customer service for Metromobility. Hello, Andy.
Hi, Sam. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us tonight. Yes, we appreciate you being on. So I want to start out, but you've been with Metromobility a little while. Can you tell us what brought you to Metromobility?
I'm a person with a disability myself. I have cerebral palsy and certainly a lifetime public transit user, paratransit or more often fixed route. So certainly I recognize the intersection between accessible, vibrant transportation for folks with disabilities and all sorts of other quality of life supports and issues that face us as a community. So something that I am fairly passionate about, certainly directly impacted by. So when the opportunity came, I was excited to take it on.
What is Metromobility?
The federal name for programs.
However you want to do it. Go ahead.
Yeah, the federal name for programs like Metromobility is ADA Paratransit. ADA, obviously, as probably anybody listening to this knows, is Americans with Disabilities Act. And paratransit really just means, obviously, any service that the government provides under Title II of the ADA has to be accessible for folks with disabilities. And one service that our government here provides regionally is Metro Transit. So Metromobility is the accessible version of that Metro Transit system for folks who can't always take conventional Metro Transit busing because of the symptoms of their disabilities.
So is it, who is qualified to use Metromobility? Is it limited to, like, if you can take a bus, can you not take Metro? Or can you, how does that work?
Yeah, in order to qualify for Metromobility, your disability does need to prevent you from taking the city bus at least some of the time. Now, that doesn't mean that if you ever take the city bus, that you can't be certified for Metromobility. But there do need to be some circumstances where your disability would prevent you from taking the city bus in your region. And it does need to be your disability that prevents you from taking the city bus, not just the limitations of the fixed route system. So, you know, the fact that the bus doesn't run overnights and you work third shift does not qualify you for Metromobility, even if you have a disability. But the fact that you have night blindness and you cannot see well enough at night to access fixed route independently, and you've never had orientation and mobility training, that could qualify you for Metromobility.
So then what about if you don't have sidewalks to the bus stop? You can get there in the spring, but in the winter it could be dangerous for you to traverse the road because of visual impairment or being in a wheelchair. That would obviously qualify you then.
Yep, pretty much anybody in a mobility device is going to qualify for Metro Mobility, partially because we live in Minnesota, and partially because we as a nation haven't gone as far as I would like to see with regard to having sidewalks and curb cuts
Yes.
all over the place with urban sprawl. But certainly, even in the urban core, where we're pretty good about sidewalks and curb cuts, you might be Charles Atlas with your upper body, but if you're headed off to catch the bus to go to work and the snowplow comes through and buries all the curb cuts, probably if you're in a mobility device, you're not making it over that snowplow mound. So you qualify for Metro Mobility.
How does Metro Mobility work?
To get certified, there's a two-part application. The first part is kind of just self-reporting. What is your disability? How do you get around? Do you currently take public transit at all? Those types of questions. And then part of it is a medical verification form or professional verification form that a wide range of medical professionals can fill out, corroborating some of the info and the part that the applicant themselves fills out. And then once we get that, we will make a determination on a completed app within 3 weeks. And currently, we're at about a week out. And then we will get someone certified, after which point they can contact their provider at least one day in advance to book rides any place in the region that has transit service.
So let's talk about how wide of an area Metro Mobility covers currently.
Sure. The basic rule of thumb is that we are based on the 2006 transportation taxing district. But there is one recent exception to that. At the time that that rule was kind of put into place, Metro Mobility had served the same service area forever, really going back to the late 70s, way before the passage of the ADA. We had no intention of serving anything differently. However, Metro Mobility is an expensive program, and there were some folks at the Capitol kind of sniffing around to see whether or not it might make sense to cut down the service area. The disability and senior communities did a great job of advocating and kind of formally codifying in law the service area as it existed then, which basically goes east to west from Stillwater to Mound, and north to south from the city of Anoka down now to Lakeville, which is the one exception to the taxing district rule. Lakeville was not part of the transportation taxing district in 2006, but did join shortly thereafter. And just Murphy's Law, after the taxing district having been unchanged for years and years, right after this law passed, locking it into the 2006 version for Metro Mobility service, Lakeville comes on. And just a few years ago, they finally got incorporated into Metro Mobility's service area. So our current service area is the 2006 Transportation Taxing District plus Lakeville.
Wow. So obviously there's been a lot of changes with the pandemic and busing and whatnot. Light rail is trying to grow and growing, hopefully. busing will ebb and flow, I think, but in general, hopefully it will start expanding a little bit at some point again. How does Metro Mobility expand? What decides if you're going to expand Metro Mobility or include another community in that?
Sure. Essentially, the rule is at a federal level, if you have Metro Transit City bus service, that is all day long, non-express local service, then you get Metro Mobility, and you get it at the same hours that Metro Transit regular local service serves your community. So, if you live in Minneapolis or St. Paul, and you're traveling to a location within those core cities, Metro Mobility obviously is going to run 24/7 because the city bus runs 24/7 in those communities. But you get out to a third tier suburb and maybe there's only very truncated service, particularly on weekends. The reasons for that are, again, we are the accessible version of the city bus. So it is our job from a federal perspective to provide the same access to public transportation as somebody without a disability could get using Metro Transit. Now, we do go a little bit beyond that. In fact, about a third of our service area is beyond what we would need to cover if we were strictly using the federal requirements. But the short answer is that we basically go where the city bus goes when the city bus goes there.
But you do cover some non-ADA areas. So how do you decide that?
That is based on that 2006 Transportation Taxing District plus Lakeville. So we have portions of those outlying communities that are in the taxing district that have very little or on some days no access to public transportation through Metro Transit. And so we kind of pick up the slack a little bit for folks with disabilities and provide some extra service in those communities. Less about providing service to entire communities that don't have service, more about providing Metro Mobility service to areas within those communities that don't have public transit access. The federal law says that Metro Mobility would need to provide service within 3/4 of a mile of every fixed route bus. But in reality, what we do is we have just chosen to serve the entire community that fixed route touches. So if a bus goes into Prior Lake, one route that clips a corner of Prior Lake until 10 o'clock at night is going to trigger service to the entirety of Prior Lake for Metro Mobility until 10 p.m.
And I presume then the schedule of how long Metro Mobility runs in each community is determined by the busing hours, pretty much.
Yes. The one exception to that is if there is a community that has absolutely no service on a Saturday or Sunday, we give a very short 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. amount of service just to give something to allow people to get out and run an errand on a Saturday or Sunday, even if there is absolutely no bus service in that community.
Excellent. So what do you do? I know you manage customer service, but what does that mean?
Well, a few different things. I work with all of our contractors to help ensure obviously federal compliance, but then also just responsive practices that are aware of customer need, responsive to customer need, and responsive to customer feedback. I deal with specific instances that get elevated beyond my staff. And I supervise a great group of seven folks who handle calls into the Met Council at the Metro Mobility Service Center, and two paratransit evaluators who conduct in-person assessments in cases where it's unclear from just the paper application whether or not somebody might be eligible. We might have them come in for an assessment, or during the pandemic, do a virtual assessment through WebEx or Teams or something to help them gain eligibility or make a determination.
Excellent. We need to take a short station break and we'll be right back.
Programming is supported by the Science Museum of Minnesota, presenting Science is All of Us, a celebration of diversity in science featuring online experiences and activities, in-person events, and exhibits about science connected to race and culture. Museum visitors can discover a scientific perspective on race in the Race, Why Are We So Different? Exhibit, and explore how generations of Dakota and Ojibwe people have made their home in this place now called Minnesota in the We Move and We Stay exhibit. More information at smm.org.
This is KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and KFAI.org. This is Disability and Progress. My name is Sam. We're speaking with Andy Strisik. Andy's customer service manager for Metro Mobility. And I want to talk about drivers. So with this, you need drivers. Let's talk about how many drivers Metro Mobility has.
You know, I don't know. That would be a good question for our operations manager. But I can tell you that we have, you know, hundred. It's in the hundreds, in the high hundreds, across all of our three contracts, and we are in all three. The number is in flux because our contractor never stops hiring. So they are perpetually hiring drivers. Even in a non-pandemic economy, it is a job that is grueling compared to the rate at which it is compensated. So all the contractors, and this is true throughout the country, have found that it makes the most sense to just never really stop hiring.
And is there a Metro Mobility in every state?
I would assume so is the answer, because any municipality that has public busing needs to have ADA paratransit. So technically, if there is a state that has no public bus system whatsoever, then they would not need to have a paratransit system. But I can't imagine that there's a state that doesn't have an urban area with public busing.
I want to go back to the drivers and talk a little bit about, I'm sure they get training for Metro Mobility for driving and knowing how to handle safety protocols and health stuff now as far as that goes. And sometimes, and maybe many times, they have to assist people getting on and off the bus. Explain some of the things that drivers have to do and what kind of training they get.
Sure. In terms of what drivers have to do, obviously their primary responsibility is to drive the bus. But Metro Mobility offers door through door service, meaning that they get out of the vehicle at the pickup location and help escort a customer from that exterior door right onto the bus. So they can, you know, offer assistance with physical stability, you know, literally lend an arm to help folks if necessary. If someone cannot self-propel their mobility device, a driver can assist with pushing it from the door to the lift of the vehicle. And then we'll obviously operate the lift and help secure the mobility device for the customer that uses it. If customers who are ambulatory or in a mobility device need help with a lap belt, our drivers are trained to assist with that. And then obviously driving, safe driving records are essential. They also do extensive training on conflict resolution, disability sensitivity, and basically de-escalation We recognize that we serve a variety of people with non-physical disabilities who can sometimes face unique challenges when traveling on public transit. And we expect drivers to employ de-escalation skills and patience when trying to help folks relax and manage their symptoms, including people with invisible disabilities or non-physical disabilities.
So I know during the pandemic that you asked people to take just necessary rides. And knowing that disabilities, you know, people with disabilities had a disadvantage already, it got worse during the pandemic. And I know sometimes I have seen, especially people with invisible disabilities, get a little bit out of hand, or there's a problem and that needs to be addressed. And what, when that happens on the bus, if it happens, what is the role? I mean, obviously the driver should be trained to de-escalate, but is there anything, or what should the riders do?
Well, similar to the conventional city bus, the Metro Transit bus, safety is really the primary concern. So we would expect the driver to sort of gently try to de-escalate things. We would expect other customers to try and avoid interjecting one way or the other in any kind of disruptive activity or potential dispute. Really, 99 times out of 100, our drivers and customers can do a good job of de-escalating the situation themselves. The customer can kind of come to terms with whatever particulars were triggering some of their symptoms. There are cases where street supervisors who are employed by our contractors can come out and assist the driver. And if that's not working on rare cases, just like as is true on the city bus, we can employ transit police to come out and de-escalate the situation that way, or in extremely rare cases, remove somebody from the vehicle. But for the most part, it really does solve the problem just to have drivers who are patient, willing to get yelled at a little bit, and kind of calmly walk somebody through the situation.
So there's a lot of rides that get made through Metro Mobility, and there's now more than one different way to make a ride. Can you go through the different ways and how people can schedule a ride and how that's done?
Yeah, we have a number of them. Certainly still by far the most popular way and the classic way is to do so by phone. When someone is certified, they will get a temporary Metro Mobility card that has the phone number of their particular provider on it. We kind of split our service area into three chunks, one western, which is kind of Minneapolis and the western suburbs, one eastern, St. Paul and the east suburbs, plus up into like Anoka County, and then the southern area, which is Bloomington and Richfield on south into Dakota County. And each of these has, you know, is held by three different contracts, three different phone numbers, three different staffs. And calling is still the way the vast majority of bookings are made. However, it is not the only way, as you pointed out. We have an extremely small number of folks for whom it works best to fax. And you can do that at each of the providers. We still require that they have the old relic, the TTY, so you can use a TTY still to book a ride at the providers. And then you can email, which is gaining popularity. You can fire off an email to book a ride. And then finally, another way that is back and increasing in popularity is the online booking app. If you go to metromobility.org under the scheduling header and the book your trip online, button that's within the scheduling header, then you can book a trip yourself online without interacting with a reservationist at all. However, before you do that, you do need to call my staff at 651-602-1111 and just get set up with a password.
You talked about the Metro Mobility app. I think that's happening more and more in regards to having apps to schedule things. Where does one find that and how does that work?
Well, the Metro Mobility online booking app is set up to be mobile site friendly. So it functions like an app, but it really is it's a website. It is within our website. So if you go to metromobilityagain.org, go to that scheduling trips section, and then within the scheduling trips section, there'll be a book your trip online. You just click that and you'll be right at the online trip booking site for the core Metro Mobility service.
Now, I want to point out that I think, if I'm correct, that if you're going to book a ride like that, it has to line up as far as the times that you're trying to book, not that you're asking for, but the time when you go to make the ride, it has to be during Metro Mobility service hours, right? Like from 6 to 5 or whatever, right? You can't go schedule a ride after 5, right?
You can do that for days that are not the next day. If you wanted to book a ride today for Saturday, and you can book rides for Metro Mobility up to 4 days in advance. So on a Thursday, you could book a ride for a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or Monday. And you could call, or go online rather right now and book a ride for Saturday, Sunday, or Monday. However, you could not do it for Friday because reservations is closed. And we didn't want to give, unfair advantage to folks who have the means to afford a computer. Somebody who does not have a computer for whatever reason can no longer book a ride for the next day after 5 p.m. And we wanted to make sure that that was also the case for folks who did have internet access.
Gotcha. During the pandemic, you did something that I thought was really awesome, and it was called curb-to-curb service. Talk about what that is and how does it work, and do we still have it, and are we keeping it?
Yeah. The curbside service, as we kind of named it, was a response to the pandemic and specifically a response to the early days of the COVID-19 outbreak, where some dispensaries and drugstores even and banks were closing their stores, not letting people come inside, but we're allowing them to pull up and pick something up, use the ATM in the case of a bank, or just come and grab a script in the case of a pharmacy or dispensary. And in response to that, we kind of altered how Metro Mobility does things in those cases. Mm-hmm. Typically, each one-way trip for Metro Mobility is a separate ride on a separate bus with a separate driver, both of which need to be booked at least 1 day in advance. We don't do a will call type thing.
Right.
You've got to book your ride at least the day before and say what time either you want to get picked up at your starting point or what time you want to be at your destination. And then again, what time you want to get picked up at that destination and brought back to your point of origin. So what we changed is we said, basically, you can have up to 20 minutes where you're still paying two different fares and it still counts as two different rides. But that bus will just wait for you curbside, where if you call and book a curbside ride, that bus will pick you up, bring you to wherever you're going, and wait for you up to 20 minutes. And that has been, I think, a real success. think customers have liked that convenience, particularly for just real short trips, if they just needed to run in and grab something quick, not just in those examples that we gave, but in any number of situations where you really just needed 30 seconds or a couple of minutes or anything up to 20 minutes to run in and take care of something real quickly to save on the hassle of having to wait for another bus. And on the contractor side of things, it was nice for them not to have to try to find another bus that would fit for the return trip and route that. Mm. So it's not without its advantages also for the contractor. Seemed like a win-win as long as it was used sparingly. And we've got a very savvy ridership. And what did happen in some cases is we had customers booking a chain of curbside rides to essentially commandeer a bus for an entire day. And we, you know, clearly can't do that. So what we did is we started to limit curbside rides to one per customer per day, one round mm-hmm. trip.
Okay.
Or it doesn't necessarily have to be a round trip, but one ride where the bus will wait for you one time at the curb for up to 20 minutes. And as long as customers can keep it to that, we do have hopes that that's going to be sustainable, even post-pandemic. We are still doing it now. We are doing it on a pilot basis, hoping to continue to do that indefinitely into the future.
And is it monetarily beneficial for the providers?
Not necessarily, but perhaps, you know, they're not having to spend the time trying to find another home mm-hmm. for that return ride. They're not having to spend the time trying to physically, you know, move that booking onto the bus and those types of things. But a bus is sitting idle for up to 20 minutes too, mm-hmm. that could otherwise be in use. So there are monetary advantages and monetary disadvantages potentially. And I think it depends on the particular case to say whether or not, you know, that's of a financial benefit to the provider. What I can say is all things considered, it is never a substantial detriment, that as long as we're limiting it to one a day, it's really, not ever a substantial detriment compared to sending a second bus.
So Andy, besides the great curbsides and Metro Mobility making ride system, there is something that does happen called same day. Can you explain how that works?
Sure. ADA paratransit really is designed to be, you know, shared ride public transit. So, yeah, we're picking you up right at where you're starting from and dropping you off right at wherever you're going. But in between there, we're picking up and dropping off other people too, just like other forms of city busing do. A function inherent to ADA paratransit is that you've got to book the ride at least one day in advance. But we recognize that for some folks, shared ride transportation just doesn't work well for whatever reason. And there are times when needing to book a ride one day in advance doesn't avail itself to spontaneity or emergencies that might pop up. So to kind of address those things, we have partnered with a cab company, Taxi Services, Inc., to provide a premium same-day service, which is just a private taxi cab. It does not have the same escort rules or anything. It is just your typical cab ride like anybody might take with or without a disability. But Metro Mobility subsidizes some of that fare. How it works is the customer pays the first $5 of the metered fare, and then Metro Mobility pays up to the next $15 of that fare. And then the customer is back on the hook for anything over that.
Okay. So if my ride's $30, I pay for the first $5, you pay for the next $15, and then I pay for the rest of the $30 after.
Yep.
All right. There is an app, though, that works pretty nifty with this. Talk about that.
Sure. Similar to the way that you can go to metromobility.org and book your Metro Mobility trip online, there is a wide hailing service called iHail, which is an imprint of Taxi Services, Inc. And it basically makes it function sort of like a transportation networking company, like an Uber or a Lyft. You can rate your driver, but obviously you can book your ride, tell where the cab is as it's on its way to you, and those types of things. That is available for Android devices and iOS devices, and it's just called iHail. I and then hail, like hail a taxi, H-A-I-L. I should point out, too, that for folks who want to use it on a desktop, you can also do that rather than having it just be on a device. And to access it on a computer, you can go to eride.tplusride, T for transportation, plus ride.com/iHail.
Is the iHail app in the App Store?
Yes.
So one of the neat things I think now is that when you're booking your ride, you can see where the Metro Mobility or where the cab is, you know, the same day cab, which is a discount cab pretty much, but you can see where that is, how far that is from you. So if they're just 2 miles away, it might say 2 miles or 5 minutes or something like that. So it gives you a timeline to kind of work with, you know, because stuff happens. You need to go use a little girl's room, or you need to grab a drink of water, or your kid all of a sudden took their shoe off and you are frantically searching for it. So many things can happen, and so it gives you an idea of where that ride is so that you can be more properly prepared. How do you schedule these rides? Is it just through the app, or do you go through Metro Mobility, or what do you do now?
You no longer go through Metro Mobility at all to schedule premium same day rides. The app is definitely the preferred method, but you can call the cab company directly at 612-888-8888 to book a ride also.
So do you have to have a code to begin using it?
Yes, you have to register for the app so that it links you to your Metro Mobility account and knows that you are eligible for that up to $15 subsidy per ride. And your code for the cab registration will contain your Metro Mobility ID. But it needs to be 7 digits long for the cab company, and it needs to start with an 8, the number 8. So the longest Metro Mobility ID numbers are 6 digits. And if you've got a 6-digit Metro Mobility ID number, it would just be your Metro Mobility ID with an 8 in front of it. If you've got a shorter Metro Mobility ID, it would be your ID number with an 8 in front of it, followed by however many zeros it takes to get to a 7-digit number. So if your ID number is 12345, your number for registering on the cab will be 8012345.
So you don't have to call the service center to get any permissions or?
Nope.
Okay.
So as with anything, Metro Mobility is not without its issues. And that can be a number of things that go wrong in taking a trip, including missing your ride time, having late pickup, maybe being on the bus too long, maybe you've had a difficulty with a driver, anything like that. How do you initiate a complaint?
You can do it a number of ways. Similar to booking a ride, you can TTY us or email us or call us. All of which, all the contact information for the Metro Mobility Service Center, which is housed at the Met Council, is part of the Met Council, is included in a welcome packet that folks will get when they get certified. And I do want to say, because I take every opportunity I can to say this, I really like complaints. You know, I know that nothing is perfect. I'm like, just like you said, everything has some issues in life. And the way that we know something isn't working is when somebody calls up and tells us about it. You know, I can monitor overall stats and see, you know, within this hour, we have this on-time percentage, and that hour, we've got that on-time percentage. And we're meeting maximum on board times and blah, blah, blah. But all of that is in aggregate. You know, it's just a statistic. Really hearing those individual stories lets us know when something isn't working for somebody and reminds myself and my staff about the importance of the work that we do and why it is, you know, that we need to make sure and take our jobs seriously. So I appreciate complaints. It really helps us, you know, lets us know how our providers are doing in a particular situation. And I have run across folks who are sometimes trepidatious about complaining. I mean, the reality is that in our society, we've got a long, long history of treating us people with disabilities pretty poorly. People yes. can feel vulnerable, and people can be conditioned to just kind of shut up and take whatever they can get. That's not what I want for Metro Mobility customers. I appreciate squeaky wheels who are willing to let me know if something isn't going the way they think it ought to be going.
So which should we do? Something happened on the bus, and should I call my provider or should I call the service center?
Call the service center. Every time, okay. please. The contractors should also be forwarding those calls to us or making a record of those calls themselves. But we have a complaint or customer feedback module. I should call it customer feedback because we do take compliments for drivers too and other staff.
there are some
good, I was just going to mention.
Yeah.
Yes.
But we track customer feedback. And we also track provider responses. But in order for us to get that into the module and make sure that it's there and make sure that we can track those numbers, those calls do need to come into the Metro Mobility Service Center at the 651-602-1111 number.
Yeah, I was going to say recently it was Driver Appreciation Day. And so I presume that number you can still give some customer or driver feedback and compliments if you have had an awesome driver. It's just some driver who went above and beyond, and that does often happen where a driver does more than they need to or is just extra friendly and just a good overall personality and helps make things flow nicely.
Yeah, I really appreciate you bringing that up, Sam. I did want to try to sneak that in before closing because it's actually tomorrow, Transit Driver Appreciation Day. So if anybody out there listening is taking a Metro Mobility trip tomorrow, if you just want to take an extra minute to thank your driver, you know, these are men and women who, you know, if they get into this thinking that it's just a driving job and that's it, they don't last too long. The people who stick around recognize that this is an independent living gig, you know, and that they're having a positive impact on the lives of folks with disabilities. They work really, really hard and they don't make a ton of money for it. So if folks want to take some time to thank your driver, any day would be appreciated. But tomorrow is sort of a formally recognized event at the national level to kind of take some time and thank your transit driver.
I do know that one of the other methods of communicating with kind of speaking about what's going right and what isn't through Metro Mobility is the meetings that you guys used to host. I know we kind of had to smooth it out during the pandemic, but hopefully now that things are lifting a little more, they'll be coming back more reliably. And you do them twice a year? How does this work?
Yeah, we do two of them a year. The last one, because of the pandemic, was virtual. And this next one, because of the pandemic, is also going to be virtual. We're going to hold two different days on the 10th and the 12th of May. Is going to be our next one. And it's just an opportunity to come and give some feedback and also listen to Metro Mobility Management, talk about anything that's coming down the pipeline. We typically, and we'll go back to this certainly when we're doing them in person, have one sort of midday and one in the evening. What we ran into virtually is the midday one was very well attended. And with the one in the evening, staff way, way, way outnumbered members of the public or riders. So for this next one coming up in May, we are doing both of them in the midday. Again, May 10th and 12th, starting probably around 11:45.
I did miss the cookies, drinks and snacks that were offered in the real life. So I do want to take this opportunity to part of the thing is it's really hard to alert riders on things that are happening, changes that have been made, and new changes that are coming up. And I even find, as much as you guys try to email, there's always somebody who misses or somebody who didn't get it or somebody, whatever it might be. So what are the best ways that people can find out what's coming up and any changes that have been made for Metro Mobility? Also, maybe you can talk about any new things that are coming up.
Sure. You can always check our website. We don't tend to change a lot in typical years, but boy, these last few years have been nothing if not atypical. So there were some changes. You brought up curbside. We have never accepted applications by fax or email. They've had to be physically mailed. We've begun to accept applications by fax and email, and are likely to continue doing that post-pandemic. So there have been some changes that we are keeping on, and then some that we have jettisoned as the pandemic winds down. Probably most notably, we were transporting members of the general public who worked as staff in healthcare facilities, even if they didn't have a disability, to bring them back and forth to work so they could treat people during the pandemic. But that healthcare worker ride situation has since ended, because obviously our main job is transporting folks with disabilities. And once our ridership started to bounce back and go up, we no longer had capacity to do the healthcare worker rides. But yeah, you can check our website. You can call in to that 651-602-1111 number and make sure that you are signed up for the listserv, the email listserv, so that if we do have changes that go out, or if we do want to send you an electronic copy of the newsletter we try to send out a couple of times a year, that we make sure and include you on that.
Let's talk masks. That's been a big deal, obviously. How long is the mask mandate going to keep going as of now? And also, when you go back to having these meetings in live, do you think you'll always keep some option of having some virtual now that Pandora's box has been opened?
Well, you know, it's difficult because, you know, a virtual option is really nice, but some of our committee meetings are governed by public meeting law, which pretty much precludes virtual participation in non-emergency situations. You can participate virtually, but if you're on a committee that is subject to public meeting law, your location needs to be disclosed where you physically are and needs to be made open to the public. So basically, public would need to be able to attend where you are, which doesn't work real great if someone's trying to attend such a meeting from their house as a committee member, for example. So
this is true.
So there are some challenges there, but we absolutely see the benefits of virtual participation and are interested in trying to make that fit well, you know, where we can.
And the masks?
Masks have been extended out. They the executive order that requires masks on public transit was going to expire tomorrow on the 18th. And it's been extended out for one more month at least. So that will now expire on April 18th. So at least until then, drivers and passengers on Metro Mobility are required to wear masks.
I think we have one more station break to get to, and we'll be right back.
Programming is supported by North Point Health and Wellness Center, located at Plymouth and Penn in North Minneapolis. This winter, North Point reminds you to follow the three W's: wash your hands, wear your mask, and watch your distance. North Point provides COVID-19 vaccinations to everyone ages 5 and up. Visit their website at northpoint.org to keep up with their vaccination plans and find out about their walk-in hours.
Programming on KFAI is supported by Southside Pride Monthly Newspaper. Locally owned and operated, Southside Pride supports the racial and cultural diversity of the many neighborhoods that make up South Minneapolis. More information is available at southsidepride.com.
And KFAI 90.3 Minneapolis is where you are, or KFAI.org. You're listening to Disability and Progress with Andy Strusik, manager of customer service for Metro Mobility. Andy, I know there's a couple different kinds of vehicles that are used for Metro Mobility, which are sedans and vans or buses, right? How do you decide what you're going to send for whom?
Yeah, almost all of our vehicles really are low-floor buses. We have a very small number of SUVs, which in our nomenclature we often still refer to as sedans because they used to be Crown Victorias until they quit making the Crown Vics. But we have a small number of SUVs, which obviously we just send to folks who are ambulatory. But the vast, vast majority of our vehicles are short cutaways, small buses that are lift equipped.
Okay. When you're taking Metro Mobility, let's say I'm going to go, which I recently did in the fall, to North Carolina, and I wanted to use their Metro Mobility there. Can you talk a little bit about if that can be done and how you do it, or how you
Absolutely.
Go about finding what their rules are? Okay.
Absolutely. Being certified for any ADA paratransit allows you to use any other one in the country for up to 21 days as a visitor. So all you need to do is find out from the municipality who their paratransit provider is. And then you can have my staff at that, again, 651-602-1111 number, send your certification information to that municipality or that entity that does the paratransit service wherever you're traveling to. And then you can ride as a guest for, again, up to 21 days in a year.
And if you're bringing your family somewhere or something, how does that work if you want to schedule a ride and bring your family with you?
Every rider for every trip has the right to be guaranteed to bring up to two additional folks, one who would function as a PCA. Anybody who wants to bring somebody along to help can bring along somebody as a PCA. And for us, that's not somebody who needs to necessarily be getting paid as a PCA. It could be anybody coming along to help you with anything. And then everybody also has the right to bring along one guest. who's just coming along to come along. Guests pay the same fare as the customer does. There is no fare for a PCA.
Excellent. And then presumably when you're calling the Disability Service Center and they send your information, they might be able to give you the phone number and info for that disability in that city and state that you're going to be in, that Metro Mobility info.
I'm sorry, I'm not following the question. What's the question?
If I contact customer service and they send my info to, let's say, I'm going to San Diego, California, they should be able to give me the number for that disability center so that I can...
There is no network of paratransit providers. So a person interested in traveling would need to call the city to which they're going or the municipality, say, call the city of San Diego and say, you know, who provides your ADA paratransit service, and would need to get the number themselves.
So the customer has to do the legwork.
Yep.
Okay.
And would it necessarily be named Metro Mobility, or could it be named any number of paratransit?
Yeah, not at all. Metro Mobility is our own name for, you know, this government program that the Met Council does within the Twin Cities. So in all likelihood, it's going to be called something else.
You would just ask for the paratransit for people with disabilities, or what would you ask for?
Yeah, ADA paratransit provider.
All right. Well, we have to wrap it up. Is there anything else you'd like to leave us with, Andy?
Well, I want to say thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. And I thank you so much for the invite, and I thank you for your time.
And where can those people go if they want to apply to be a Metmo driver?
Yeah, go ahead and call the service center or email us. You can email at metromobility, all one word, at METC, short for Metropolitan Council, like Marvin Edward Thomas Charlie, .state.mn for Minnesota, .us. Again, Metro Mobility at metc.state.mn.us. And depending on which area you'd like to mostly do your driving in, if it's, again, east, west, or south, we can put you in contact with that provider.
Andy, we always appreciate your knowledge and love having you on to inform everyone of what's going on. So thank you so, so very much. We appreciate it.
Thanks much.
This has been Disability and Progress. The views expressed on this show are not necessarily those of KFAI or its board of directors. My name is Sam. I'm the host of this show. Thanks so much for tuning in. Miguel Vargas has engineered this episode. Charlene Dahl is my research team. We've been speaking with Andy Strisik. Andy is the manager of customer service for Metro Mobility. This is KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and KFAI.org. If you'd like to be part of our email list, you may email us at disabilityandprogress@samjasmine.com. Thanks for listening. Good night.